1290 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media
ABC News
app.
I'm Chuck Sievertson. The U.S. and its G7 allies in Japan imposing new sanctions on Russia, the largest so far.
We have now announced some 300 sanctions against individuals, entities, vessels, and aircraft. We are particularly focused on circumvention and evasion targets. We are focused on financial facilitators.
National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan. Ukrainian President Zelensky will join the summit Saturday. After a standoff that lasted most of the day, debt ceiling negotiators talked for about an hour and a half in Washington. They are still no closer to a deal. A Massachusetts judge orders Jack Teixeira back to jail until his trial. He called the Air National Guardsman charged with leaking highly confidential military secrets a flight risk and a threat to national security. Washington, D.C. police officer arrested, accused of leaking confidential information to the founder of the Proud Boys extremist group and obstructed an investigation. This is ABC News. One California family was handed a surprise at their doorstep.
When UPS arrived at their door with a big Taylor Swift VIP box, the family's 19-year-old daughter was thrilled. They had tickets to go to a Taylor Swift concert. The only problem is they didn't order the VIP package or tickets at all, especially since they're for next weekend's concert 2,500 miles away in New Jersey. The family, not wanting to be identified, says...
And when she opened it, she said, oh my goodness, it's Taylor Swift tickets. It's VIP. Not only did I get one, we got six.
It was their address on the box, and so that mom is now working to track down the correct address. Alex Stone, ABC News, Los Angeles.
The case of falling home prices.
One reason why home prices may have fallen so much, they really got pumped up during the pandemic, and now we've seen so many layoffs also in the tech sector. That's one of the reasons why home values have dropped so much.
ABC's Alexis Christophorus. I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes. Good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you...
And you could be me...
For just 1 hour.
If you could find a way...
To get inside...
Each other's mind.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here. I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different. But you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
That's what we like to do on this show. Find the comedy gold. I just like
non-fungible as a word.
It is a good word.
It's a wonderful, it just has a good mouthfeel.
La-di-da, la-di-da, la-la.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon lunch hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. Hey, Jane, remember a couple like months ago when we were talking about how Wisconsin's on the brink of a constitutional crisis because of our public defenders and district attorney shortage?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. 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 So maybe we're actually going to do something about it.
Oh, stop teasing me.
Well, at least the first step was earlier this month, about a month-ish ago, maybe 2 months ago, Ari Brown, Senior Research Associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum, wrote a report on basically what's been going on with the problems with the shortage of and the low pay for public attorneys and the growing concern it has as there's backlogs of actually serving justice in Wisconsin. So welcome back, Ari Brown.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be back on.
So I guess let's just start from the very top as far as putting numbers to these very critical, important positions in Wisconsin. How much do public defenders and assistant DAs as like a starting wage typically make in Wisconsin right now?
So there is a pay progression schedule that is set for a number of different state-level positions that is published by the state's Division of Personnel Management. This changes about every fiscal year or so. Currently, and assistant DAs and public defenders are on the exact same schedule, and okay. It has been that way as far back as we can find in the data. So when we're referring to one of those groups here, we're referring to both of them.
Got it.
Currently, as of today, the starting annual salary for both of those two positions is $56,659. So about $57,000, about $27.24 an hour. So when you look at that compared to what lawyers make just generally, it, you know, is quite far below.
Very different.
That.
And so yes. It's obviously different in Wisconsin, but I remember like knowing some law students who in California, some of their starting pay at corporate law firms were like 180. And I don't think mm-hmm. it's quite that high as what the median is, but the median lawyer in Wisconsin. And when you take the median lawyer's pay in Wisconsin, is that including DAs and public defenders or is that excluding them? And this is all just private practice.
That is a good question. So that data that we include in our piece comes from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, from something called the Occupational Employment and Wage Statistics, OEWS. This is a comparison that the Wisconsin Legislative Fiscal Bureau uses. So we found it as like the most accurate way to stack up what ADAs and public defenders are making against what someone with a comparable type of job would make in the private sector. I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember if it includes them or does not, but obviously the preponderance of lawyers in Wisconsin are in the private sector. Yeah. So this would be predominantly private sector, but their median pay as of 2021, which is the most recent data available, was $115,336. If you compare that to the median for ADAs and public defenders, which is slightly higher than the starting salary, that's about $74,000, but that's a $40,000 gap in the median salaries between those two positions.
That's a lot.
It is a lot.
That is a lot.
Well, and especially when you consider, obviously it depends upon what law school you went to, but all of these lawyers end up with an enormous amount of school debt.
Yes. And I think that is, you know, more so than a lot of other jobs when you compare the public sector pay and benefit package to the private sector. There are all sorts of reasons why someone might take a public sector job over a private sector job, including benefits, including just kind of the sense of doing something, having pride in working in the public sector. But I think when you look at a gap in pay that is that large, especially for those individuals that all necessarily had to go through law school, that is a really, really noticeable difference, and certainly something that we just hear anecdotally is swaying people away from taking these positions and more towards moving to the private sector.
Which is probably one of the many reasons that this is causing the constitutional crisis that we were either in or could be in. And so I guess as you, with your report, as you looked at these two offices, what was kind of notable as far as the problems that they're facing or kind of the history of how we got here? And we could take them one at a time.
Yeah, so I'll start with district attorneys. And some of the data that we got for each of these two offices differs a little bit. It was just what we were able to obtain to kind of paint this picture. But to start with, so for district attorneys, the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association noted that just based on the average number of cases that their offices received around the state from 2019 to 2021, the state would need about 577 full-time prosecutors to fulfill that level of work on an annual basis. Just handling that workload and working 40-hour weeks. So okay. No overtime, just 40-hour weeks. They would need 577 full-time employees. Currently, they have about 456, and not all of those positions are filled. So we're looking at a shortage in terms of just addressing the workload in a 40-hour week of about 100 positions. That is before you account for vacancies and you account for turnover and you account for all of those other factors.
So it's basically we're over 100. Like the discrepancy between how many people are needed and what there's actually budget allocation for is already about 100 job difference. And then of the jobs that are available and budgeted for, not all of those are even filled.
Correct. Got it. That's based off of information from the Wisconsin District Attorneys Association. But yes, that's the best information that we, you know, found available to kind of get at what does the workload look like. Another thing that I think, you know, kind of the cascading effects of that are, I think the term backlog has been tossed around quite a bit. And I think that sometimes it's, you know, not exactly clear what that means. But essentially, you know, during the pandemic, the first year to year and a half or so of the pandemic, the court system slowed down quite a bit. Mm-hmm. There were not a lot of in-person cases happening. And that created, you know, there are cases that need to be heard in person. So there was a backlog created. There are many cases that should have been processed during that time that for obvious reasons were not being processed. We have data on kind of how long it takes for criminal cases to be disposed or like taken care of, essentially, going back to 2013. So the median felony case in 2013 was resolved in 152 days. In 2021, that was 241 days.
Oh, wow.
For misdemeanors, it was 89 days in 2013, so just right about at that three-month mark. In 2021, it was 168 days. So really, really stark increases in just the amount of time that these cases take to be processed. Those have started coming down over the last calendar year or so, but are still well above their levels, even in 2019. And I'll also note that from 2013 to 2019, before the pandemic took effect, there were backlogs that were slowly building, obviously not to any extent from what we saw with the pandemic, mm-hmm. but those were still numbers that were increasing gradually over time.
Our guest is Ari Brown. He's a senior research associate with the Wisconsin Policy Forum, and we're talking about there might actually be an agreement on paying our DAs and those people more money. How shocking.
So is there anything else to note about the DA office?
So the one other piece of information that I think is just interesting to mention, we're only able to get data from Milwaukee County, but just in general, they have about 120 positions in their office. Over the last six full years of data that they have, so from 2017 to 2022, they had an average of about 16 separations per year, people leaving their workforce. In the beginning of the 21st century, from 2000 to 2005, the same amount of years, that was an average of 8. So that has doubled. It's a low sample size, so it's, you know, it's not exactly clear the extent, but just from testimony that we've heard from individuals in that office, certainly there's more turnover now than there used to be.
So then what does it look like on the flip side as far as the public defender's office?
Yeah, so there's a lot going on there as well. We have much more distinct numbers there for statewide what's going on that were provided to us from the Office of the State Public Defender. So from 2018 through 2020, there was an average of about 10 to 11% turnover each year in their workforce. That jumped up to 17.9% in 2021, and then again to 20.4% in 2022. So one out of every five individuals in the State Public Defender's Office left in 2022, which is a staggering number. Yeah, so that was one that really stood out to us. And at the same time, in each of the four previous fiscal years, the number of applications to fill those positions have declined. So that was 355 in 2018, and that has dropped to 168 in 2022. So I think that really gets at kind of the issue, and just shows you the extent to which there is a workforce challenge happening right now.
And it's interesting, like, one of my best friends since childhood is a public defender in Madison. And like, she is truly one of those people who's like, this is what she is committed to, this work. She'll also complain about the pay.
I'm sure.
it's basically asking people on either side, because as like having starting wage for a DA or a public defender being the same amount, it's asking people to like, you, it's like teachers almost, where it's like, well, you signed up for this. You know, you're a bleeding heart who believes in the system. So you, because of that, you should be willing to be paid less.
Yeah, how dare you care?
And so when we come back from the break, I want to first talk about like why we need to solve this for the good of all society. This is not just about paying people more money in those jobs. Why the shortage itself actually affects all of us, but then also because there was a proposed in Governor Evers' budget proposal, he had a part of that that was going to address this. And then shockingly this week, there was actually some bipartisan movement on a Republican bill that also addresses this, that I think was even a dollar more per hour than Governor Evers. And so I would love your insight, Ari, when we come back, on if either of those proposals go far enough to potentially alleviate some of the problems that we're seeing. So when we come back, Ari Brown, senior researcher with Wisconsin Policy Forum, will still be here. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Data, mo, data. I'm all about the 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 data, about the data. I'm all about the data, mo, data. I'm all about the data, mo, data. I'm all about the data, mo, data. I'm all about the data, about the data.
Data.
I'm all about the data, mo, data. I'm all about the data, mo, data. I'm all about the data, mo, data.
Have heart failure and often hear,
those stomach issues ruined your birthday.
You're too tired to play catch, Grandpa.
Sweetie, you haven't touched your tools since the carpal tunnel syndrome diagnosis.
If these seemingly unrelated symptoms sound familiar, talk to your cardiologist and ask about transthyretin amyloid cardiomyopathy, or ATTR-CM, a rare and underdiagnosed disease that gets worse over time. Learn more at connecttoyourheart.com. That's connecttoyourheart.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up.
Hold my hand?
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Here's your updated forecast. Partly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 44. Northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Sunny skies. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 72. Partly cloudy tomorrow night, lows around 51. Temperatures above average Sunday and Monday with highs in the mid-70s. Another look at the short range, lows level off around 44 overnight. We should top out around 72 tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 49.
Keeping the Fox Valley connected, informed, and entertained. This is Civic Media.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere, and we are talking to Ari Brown, Senior Research Associate with Wisconsin Policy Forum, about what's happening with our public defender's offices and our DA offices and why it's important, why you should care, I think is the next question. And so for, you know, many of us, I would say probably, I don't exactly know what the number is, but I would say the great majority of us don't necessarily interact with the criminal justice system. And so why should any of us care if we're not in the backlog and waiting for our case to be heard, or the victim of a crime waiting for that case to be heard? Why is this something that needs to be addressed because it's actually affecting our society?
Yeah, so I'll kind of break this down into the two offices. So I'll start with public defenders. It is a constitutional right to have representation regardless of your income level. You know, the way that that works in different states is different, but essentially, you know, even if you cannot afford an attorney to represent you in court, you are constitutionally allowed to have one, and that is the job of public defenders. When those individuals are not compensated requisite to what some of their peers make in the private sector, and you don't have those positions filled, you are, you know, treating individuals who can't afford attorneys differently than you are treating individuals who can afford attorneys. And so I think that that is something that really stands out. You know, we can never say when any of us are going to be in dire financial straits. And I think it is reassuring to know that we live in a country where you are afforded a constitutional right to legal representation.
Yep.
On the other side, you know, I think that there is a lot of conversation over the last couple of years about crime and public safety. And really, when you slow down the level to which prosecutors can handle cases, criminal cases that are coming into their offices, you know, there are, you know, it really just gums up the whole system. And you have, you know, individuals who might be aware that that criminal cases are not being prosecuted in the way that they used to be, and you know, might get away with certain crimes in a way that they might not have been able to in the past. You know, obviously, the extent to which that's happening is hard to say, but you really do need a functional prosecutorial system in order for, you know, it's just a key facet of the public safety conversation in a broad sense. So to have a workforce there that is not fully functional creates these backlogs. And for individuals who have a criminal case, they're spending longer and longer amounts of time having that case processed, potentially sitting in some sort of local jail or state prison, which is, you know, something that you don't want to have happen. It's just a bad policy outcome.
So at least there's some movement it sounds like, on addressing this problem. And so I know we don't have a ton of time left, but as far as kind of outlining or high level, talk about what has been introduced in the legislature, how that differs from what Ever said, and do either of these stand a chance to actually solve or at least start to solve this problem?
So to start with the proposals, both Governor Evers and the Republican legislature have seemed to be on board with pay increases. So in the governor's budget proposal for both of these offices, there's a new starting salary of $35 an hour. The Republican legislature's proposal raised that to $36 an hour. But ultimately, we're talking about a difference of about about $2,000 a year. So the governor's proposal would be $72,800 a year versus the Republican proposal would be $74,880, but much more in line with what you might see in the private sector. So that seems there seems to be a good amount of bipartisan agreement on that one. I, you know, would be surprised to not see this get through to some extent. Both Governor Evers and the Republican proposal add some prosecutorial positions. It obviously differs on all the details of that, but there are a couple positions that are added. I think the other really big one that comes into play on the public defender side, and something that is that was included in the governor's bill and is also included in the Republican proposal, there are private sector attorneys who will take on public defender work, either when workloads are too large or when there's a conflict of interest. They're compensated at a flat rate that is set by the state of Wisconsin. For a while, it was $40 an hour, which for a while was the lowest rate in the country. That was raised to $70 an hour in 2020, which was not the lowest, but still kind of towards the bottom. The governor pitched a $100 an hour set hourly rate there, and the Republicans have included it in their proposal. So that is also something that we're likely to see, and that can really help to alleviate some of that backlog on the public defender side. In terms of how this will impact things, I think that's going to be the real question for policymakers to pay attention to going forward. You've seen a lot of these conversations happen anecdotally. You hear about DA offices where you have one or two individuals leave, and that's like 50% of the prosecutorial power of that entire county. And that can be a real problem. And I think you've heard salary kind of at the forefront of this conversation. So this kind of pretty stark salary raise is something that you would hope would bring people back, or at least bring people to apply to these jobs, maybe not necessarily keep them around for extended periods of time, but at least bring in those new individuals with pay rates that are much closer to what you see in the private sector. If that doesn't happen, I think it's going to be on those same policymakers to go back and talk to the DAs and public defenders around the state and say, you know, we raise pay, that doesn't seem to be bringing people back. Why aren't more people applying for these jobs? But I think, you know, there seems to be a lot of bipartisan agreement, which I know in this state is not something we are used to.
We got to celebrate when it happens, man.
this seems, you know, this is one of the things in the budget that I think we might actually see some real movement on, which is pretty exciting.
That is exciting because this is a big deal. And so thank you for covering it. Thank you for breaking it down for us, Ari. Excited to have you back on whatever next project you report on and publish. And so it's always fun to have you here.
Always fun being here. Thanks for having me back.
All right. When we come back, we will be talking to federal prosecutor Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, who is an expert on congressionally run investigations, to talk about all these investigations that are happening on in D.C. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
This is Civic Media for the Fox Valley.
ABC News. I'm Daria Albinger. They met, they talked, but negotiators are no closer to a deal to raise the debt ceiling as the clock continues to tick down to a potentially catastrophic default on U.S. debt. At the G7 summit, President Biden announced a major shift in U.S. policy toward Ukraine. Ukrainian pilots can begin training to fly U.S.-made fighter jets.
The obvious first step there is to do the training and then to work with allies and partners and the Ukrainians to determine how to do the actual provision of planes as we move forward.
National Security Advisor Advisor Jake Sullivan at the summit. An Air National Guardsman charged with leaking military defense secrets will stay in jail until his trial. A Massachusetts judge says Jack Teixeira is a flight risk and a potential threat to national security. The Justice Department's won a lawsuit to end a partnership between American Airlines and JetBlue, saying their alliance reduced competition. This is ABC News.
So, I have a question for all you guys out there. Why is it that I see you hauling all kinds of stuff in your trucks? Lumber, ATVs, furniture, and everything is strapped down tight, except you. I mean, come on, fellas. You're just as important as your buddy's blue plaid sofa. Buckle up.
Pickups rock. They also roll. Buckle up in your truck and arrive alive. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown. Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBW and on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
Yeah, I wanna go outside, I wanna be.
We're here.
Whoa, that was fast.
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My name is Teresa Barber. I was in the United States Navy, and I served overseas in the Middle East and Africa. Early on in my career, I had a commander that taught our suicide prevention training, and the very next day, he took his own life. 90% of suicide attempts involving a gun are fatal. My way of continuing my service is to help protect my community by being a responsible gun owner and by storing firearms safely. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba.
Please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And there's a lot of investigations happening. There is Trump investigations. There are Hunter Biden investigations. There's John Durham's investigation that just came back. And
FBIs
and whistleblowers. And there is a lot of moving parts for the general public to have an opinion on, differentiate. And it gets complicated when it's criminal investigations, but there's political matters. And so I'm very excited to talk to one of the authors and potentially the other author. We'll see if she can still join us. But joining us right now is Christy Parker, who is a former federal prosecutor and currently counsel at Protect Democracy, which is a nonpartisan, nonprofit, anti-authoritarian group. And given kind of the complicated politics of what's been going on, they published a report that details the proper scope of criminal prosecutions and congressional oversight, and kind of tease up what is the appropriate and what's appropriate and what's an abuse of power. And so I am so excited to have you here. Thanks for joining us, Christy.
Thank you for having me, and I'm really pumped by the Law and Order music. That was
we do what we can to, you know, we try to lighten things up as far as when it comes to very complicated and important topics. And so I guess at the very beginning and high level of this, how do you, and actually, let me introduce her as well. Ann Tindall just joined, and she is also counsel at Protect Democracy and is an expert on congressionally run investigations. And so, Ann, I was just about to ask kind of the... How does the average person look at the news and not, one, I guess, on one side, get jaded and just call all of this politically motivated versus what is serious and also needs attention and it needs a criminal investigation?
Well, so, it is very easy in the climate that we live in, I think, for people to just throw up their hands and say that there's so much chaos going on. Everything must be political. You know, what happens must be dictated by whoever's in charge. And one of the reasons we exist as an organization and one of the reasons that we wrote this report is to really try to help people focus on the fact that we are a democratic society governed by rules and laws, and we do have institutions that have rules around how they're supposed to function, and they do function every day. And there are actually ways that you can tell whether they're doing the right thing or not doing the right thing. And I think one of the key things we wanted to focus people on is that it's actually not aberrational, but normal and something we should all hope for. The idea that we can hold our political leaders accountable if they have done things that warrant investigating or charging them with crimes, because in a democratic society, no one is supposed to be above the law. So hopefully just by, you know, focusing on those rules, those institutions, honing in on what they're supposed to do, people can cut through all that noise and make clear assessments of what's going on.
Anne, do you have anything to add?
Sure. I mean, I think especially with respect to congressional investigations, it is easy to understand why people look at Jim Jordan throwing bombshells and think this is all a political mess. But the fact of the matter is Congress's power of oversight is an absolutely essential check on abuse of power. And we don't want to let the fact that some members may not make the best use of it take away from the fact that we need to have this sort of tool in our constitutional toolbox. Now, when you have members prejudging the results of an investigation or running right to public testimony instead of trying to get to the bottom of something, you may have a sign that this is not the best way to deploy congressional resources. But I think to suggest that to cast away as just political noise, Congress exercising its power to check other branches and other parts of the government sort of misunderstands its role in all of this.
Yeah. So you're saying we shouldn't just infer when there's no evidence, we shouldn't just infer that they're, you gotta figure it out. You gotta interpret.
That's one of the basic tenets. And, you know, I mean, good congressional investigations are designed to understand things and achieve a goal, not to, you know, Congress isn't a prosecutor. They're not there to name and shame. They're there to pass laws that make the country function better. If that's not what they're up to, then, you know, that's a good sign. They're maybe not using that power appropriately.
I think there might be some who like the whole name and shame thing. I just have a feeling for some reason.
So I guess Have these things always been this political? Because even this week we talked about it. It's like, what has more political spin right now? Like Comer's investigation that is really, like, he lost whistleblowers, Durham's findings that weren't that sticky. But as far as, like, how political this all seems, is this just part of the symptom of the era we live in of partisan politics in the 24-hour news cycle?
I th- think historians would probably say, if you really dug into the way some of our politics worked throughout our history, that, you know, that there never really was a time, you know, there never really was some halcyon days of, you know, comedy all around. But I do think we live in an era now where it's just far easier to send your political messaging around the world. We have, you know, we have social media, you know, we just have means of doing that that we never had before. And frankly, we do have now some politicians who have really, pushed the envelope in terms of the way they talk about things and the way that they present themselves. I mean, when you have somebody like Donald Trump, who is, you know, who openly talks about using his government powers to exact retribution on people or to further his own political aims or to protect himself and his friends, you know, that's someone who's openly talking about doing things that are not what we do in a democratic form of government. Mm-hmm. So while we may have had people in the past who weren't great at living out the, you know, the tenets of a democracy, he truly is breaking new ground in being so willing to openly talk about what he intends to do and the departure he intends to make from the society we have thought ourselves to live in all this time.
If you are just joining us, our guests are Christy Parker, a former federal prosecutor, currently counsel at Protect Democracy, and Ann Tindall is also counsel at Protect Democracy and an expert on congressionally run investigations.
So the report that you guys published also focuses on the importance of independent law enforcement institutions and investigative bodies. So why is that so important, and how can we kind of, how can we tell if those institutions are functioning the way they should, like as the general public looks on and reads the news?
So I'll start with law enforcement, okay. And then, you know, Anne, I think, can follow up with Congress. But the law enforcement, the government's law enforcement powers are some of, if not the most potent powers that it has. If you have a person in charge of the government who seeks to use those powers as a weapon against enemies or as a weapon to promote friends, then you really have something that doesn't comport with what we think of as a democracy. So that is why it has always been so important. And certainly since, you know, post-Watergate, when we saw the abuses of that era, why it is so important to create rules, norms, and guardrails around our law enforcement institutions to make sure that they are acting in a nonpartisan way that is about law enforcement and not, again, about the political interests of the person in charge. So, you know, the way that you can tell whether they're operating in the right way is whether they're following those, you know, laws, rules, and policies. So we've got a constitution. We have the laws that the Department of Justice, for instance, is supposed to enforce. And then we also have a set of guardrails around, you know, keeping a division between the White House and the Justice Department mm-hmm. in terms of specific law enforcement matters. So you're not supposed to see the President of the United States routinely commenting on specific Department of Justice investigations or calling for specific people to be prosecuted or directing on Twitter his attorney general, you know, to do certain things. And there are actually rules that our various administrations have put in place to govern communications between the White House and the Justice Department to keep them separate. And the Justice Department also has rules that governs how it brings prosecutions, and it has rules about when it comments on cases. So if you see the Attorney General out commenting about how people are guilty of crimes before they've been prosecuted, you know, that's a way of knowing that things aren't really going well.
Yeah.
And we may have seen something like that in recent years. But I know Anne's got some things to say about how, you know, how Congress is supposed to behave as well.
Sure. I mean, Congress has vast power to investigate, but it is not unbound. It has to be tied to legislation or oversight of the funds that has appropriated And importantly, Congress is not a prosecutive body. It has the power of investigation to impeach certain officials, and beyond that, any effort to intrude on or usurp prosecutorial power is a violation of the separation of powers, and historically has been guarded against by both Congress and the executive branch through an accommodations process of, you know, compromise and coordination and conversation, a lot of which broke down over the last decade, and particularly broke down when Donald Trump told Congress to, you know, here's the back of my hand. I'm not going to give you anything you ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of escalation to, you know, no interest in what the other branch of government is trying to do and understand. You know, it's dangerous on both when it comes from the president and when it comes from Congress.
And so I'm debating, because what I really want to get to next, so I think I'm going to keep you guys through the break, because I think it's a bigger conversation than we can have in the next 3 minutes, is also because I think that there's a difference between, you both are experts, right? Federal prosecutor, expert in congressional run investigations. And there is a big gap between the expertise that you both have and the work that you've done versus the layperson sitting at home watching CNN, right? And it seems like the conduit between those two things becomes journalists and the media. And so when we come back from this break, like, I would love to talk a little bit more about the role of journalism, like journalists, and how they're breaking this down. Because I think in the last, there was a CNN poll that indicated that 76% of Americans say politics played at least some role in the decision to indict Trump. And so I would love to have a little bit more conversation about that, like the gap between what's actually happening and what, like, the perception becomes by from the people, like, sitting at home just consuming the news. And so we will talk about that when we come back from our next break. But we are talking to Christy Parker, who is a former federal prosecutor and currently counsel at Protect Democracy, and also Ann Tindall, who is counsel at Protect Democracy and an expert on congressionally run investigations. And we were talking about their new report, kind of trying to break down everything that's happening with Trump and Hunter Biden, and maybe we'll even get to what could actually happen. What would it actually mean if we prosecuted Donald Trump? All right. Well, we'll come back in just a minute. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out. Because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Here's your updated forecast. Partly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 44. Northwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Sunny skies. Tomorrow, high temperatures reach up to 72. Partly cloudy tomorrow night, lows around 51. Temperatures above average Sunday and Monday with highs in the mid-70s. Another look at the short range, lows level off around 44 overnight. We should top out around 72 tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 49.
Fox Valley, regional and state news and commentary. For us to find common ground, Civic Media.
Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinere. And we were talking to Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, who are two of the authors of a new Protect Democracy report called Investigating and Prosecuting Political Leaders in a Democracy, How to Assess the Difference Between the Rule of Law and Abuses of Power. And we ended the last segment kind of teeing up, because I read this report and it's fascinating and it's really helpful. Not everyone's going to read this. You know, the average person's not going to read this. And the gap between people who work, live, and breathe in upholding the law, and especially in D.C. and in our politics, and so you both are experts, and the gap between that and the person at home consuming the news. And so what role does the media and journalists have to play in, like, creating helpful versus unhelpful narratives when it comes, because so much of this is like our belief in democracy and then democracy is working. It's kind of like if it's a little like Santa Claus to a certain extent, right? It's like that we have to believe in it to also continue to believe that it's working. And so what have you guys found as far as what is helpful with media coverage versus what is unhelpful, and or even how can they do better? How could we do better?
Well, so one of the things I often find myself wishing is that more people could participate in the process, not by committing crimes and getting indicted, but by, you know, serving on grand juries or serving on juries, because I have found over the course of my career that when people do that, they really get a sense not only of how the system works, but they see the role that they play in it as citizens and as jurors, and they see how the rules are laid out and all of those sorts of things. But since everybody can't do that, that really is why journalists are so incredibly important, not just in providing information, but in making sure that our democracy can function by being kind of the people in the room who can help the people who aren't there understand how things are supposed to work. So yeah. I think journalists just play a really critical role, not just in amplifying the messages that the two sides of the political aisle are throwing at each other, but really on zeroing in on, okay, there's a criminal investigation going on here. What are the laws that we're dealing with here? What do we know about that's in the public record about the evidence? What do we know about whether other people who aren't political leaders who've done things like this? What do we know about how they have been treated? Let's make a comparison and make sure everybody's being treated the same. You know, what do we know about the way the Justice Department or the DA's office is behaving? And what can we tell people about whether or not they're following their own practices or whether they're deviating from those practices? So it's not just being stenographers and reporting, you know, what the various interested parties say, but it's really going in and explaining to people, this is the process. This is how it's supposed to work. These are the people who are following the process. These are the people who aren't. And here are the ways in which they are or they aren't. And I think that is really helpful in helping people cut through all that noise and seeing whether is it standard for the New York DA's office to bring a charge like the one that they brought against, you know, Donald Trump? Have they charged other people with that? Does the indictment that they brought look like ones that they brought before? You know, are we talking to people who've worked in the DA's office who can tell us about that? That's really the role that journalists play. And I think, again, it's not just, you know, reporting the news. It really is being an actor in our democracy.
I think all of that's right. And I just want to add one small point, which is it's also important that journalists not confuse the political implications of a particular investigation with a politicized investigation. Because we believe that no one is above the law, that means we also are from time to time going to see indictments or investigations of political actors. And of course, that has an impact on their political future and on our politics. That does not mean that the investigation itself is improperly politically motivated. And that is something I see journalists misconstrue from time to time.
And it was all I could think of, because the one that I didn't even throw out yet, we didn't even talk about George Santos. And that's a whole other investigation.
Which is a doozy.
It's a whole doozy in and of itself. But
who is George Santos? That's
the eternal question that some documentarian 15 years from now will probably actually uncover, and it will win an Oscar. But beyond all of these other investigations, obviously the big one, and there's many, of Donald Trump. And so I guess to kind of end on this note, what would prosecuting a former president mean for our democracy, in at least in your two's opinion?
I think based on what we've seen of his conduct and the evidence that relates to the various laws that he may have violated, like I think we all saw on January 6th and before that, that this is not a hidden thing. You know, he tried to overturn a free and fair election, and he mobilized a mob in order to, you know, just disrupt the process of finalizing that. So I think what it would mean for our democracy to actually bring him to a point where he is placed before the law and, you know, he's innocent until proven guilty like anybody else, but we go through the process that any other person who did those things and hundreds of other people who did those things have had to go through, that will actually be a moment in which we will see, you know, the words on a piece of paper that are in our Constitution, you know, the words that we say about this being a rule of law society, really coming to fruition. And we'll see how it all turns out. I mean, there's a process, and, you know, he would have a right to defend himself in that process. But I think the real question we should ask is what it would mean for our democracy if, knowing all of what we know, we can't put that process into the works, and we can't put him, you know, before the law and try to hold him accountable. Because I think that is what would really say the most about our democracy, and it wouldn't be a good thing.
He might be looking for a couple lawyers, too. I'm just throwing it out there. It seems like he has trouble keeping them employed.
I don't know. Tapioca's doing okay.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, tapioca.
That's a joke. But thank you so much. Is there anything else you would like to add or end on in the last minute that we have? I'll take that as a
I think just thank you for having us, and thank you for playing the Law and Order music.
Well, thank you, Christy Parker and Ann Tindall, so much. This is, like, thank you for the report. We will certainly add this to our show notes for today, because it is super interesting, and it's important to actually try to break through the noise, like you said. And so thank you for spending time with us. Thank you for writing this report, and thank you for your work.
Thank you.
All right. Well, when we come back, Mike Clemens will be here to talk about at Civic Media. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy. planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
UPS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay. WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green Bay. And always streaming on the Civic Media
BBC
app.
News. I'm Mike.